Okay, thank you, Dave. I'm going to talk about something a bit different to what we've heard in the previous few talks. I'm going to be talking about the stably stratified interior of the Sun, or more generally, just stably stratified domains. Okay. So an outline of the talk, I'm going to talk about the role of magnetic fields in stably stratified domains. And we heard something from Pat yesterday about how magnetic fields can have an important effect on PV homogenization. I'm not going to say too much about that. But then I'm going to talk about maybe how you might be able to generate magnetic fields. This is a dynamo conference, after all. How you can generate magnetic fields in these stably stratified domains. I'm going to describe a fairly turbulent shallow water dynamo. And I'm going to hold up my hands and say I don't really understand what's going on in these systems. Then I'm going to finish by talking about a simpler dynamo where I do understand something, at least, of what's going on. Okay. Why are we interested in magnetic fields in stable layers? Well, in many astrophysical situations, some at least of the interesting dynamics does not just take place in the convection zone, it takes place in the stably stratified region. And we heard about the tachocline earlier today. The tachocline is a stably stratified region in the Sun. In the outer layers of some planets, then they are also stably stratified to convection. And we'll see later on that they may be ionized as well. And so you might be interested in dynamos there. Now, as Pat talked about yesterday, angular momentum transport in stably stratified domains is a subtle issue. We had the climate program here. And they were talking about this a lot, talking about the driving of zonal flows in the Earth's atmosphere and jets. It's nonlinear interactions of Reynolds stresses can lead to the generation of strong zonal flows. This is an interesting form of turbulence where the interaction of mean flows and dispersive waves are important. And if anybody's interested in reading a 250-page review, then you can have a look at Pat's paper. And if you can understand any of it, then you can explain it to me. That's he's not here, is he? Okay. So it's very, very interesting. And the climate people were talking about it a lot. Now, the reason I'm interested in this is because when you add a magnetic field to these systems, you tend to get slightly different dynamics. Well, okay, very different dynamics. And we know that the tachocline is ionized and it's presumably magnetized. I'll talk a bit about that later on. And the outer layers of extrasolar planets close to their parent stars, they are hot enough to be ionized as well. You can see this paper. And then if we have ionized and magnetized systems, then the magnetic field, if there is a magnetic field, may be expected to play an important role in modifying the transport properties. And this was a very simple calculation I did with Pat and David Hughes, where we took the, if you like, the workhorse of the atmospheric literature, the beta plane, forced beta plane turbulence, and we added a magnetic field to say what can happen to the angular momentum transport. And we found that even a weak magnetic field, this is the zonal flow, the jet, as it were, that gets formed in the absence of magnetic field due to PV homogenization or the interaction of Rossby waves, the nonlinear interaction of Rossby waves, a small magnetic field can switch off the formation of this jet and lead to, instead of having an inverse cascade, having a forward cascade, and you don't get the formation of jets. This calculation assumed that there was a... That's a magnetic field. Yeah, you're welcome. It's amazing the... this is a dynamo conference. There's going to be situations where the magnetic field is decayed away and a situation where it's still there. Okay. Okay. So this assumes that there is a magnetic field present, but can a magnetic field be sustained in these stably stratified systems? And this is the question I'm going to try and answer. And if so, how? So I'm going to look at a class of dynamos that I'm going to call shallow water dynamos. So let's think about how magnetic field might arrive in a stable region. Well, it could be transported into the stable region, that's fair enough, or it could be generated there. Now, stable stratification leads to nearly two-dimensional dynamics, which is why you get the driving of jets in the first place. Now, Anvar said yesterday that unless you're 2D, you're going to have a dynamo. But if you are 2D, you're not going to have a dynamo, okay? Question is, what happens if you're nearly 2D, okay? What happens if you're, and that's essentially the theme of this talk. So if you have 2D dynamics, then you don't have a dynamo. So I'm going to look at the case where you're nearly two-dimensional. And I'm going to look at it in the context of the shallow water equations. Now, the shallow water system is probably not familiar to many of you. It is one of the workhorses of the atmospheric literature. But for MHD, you can extend shallow water theory to shallow water MHD. And this was done in a landmark paper by Peter Gilman, okay, where you can include the effects of magnetic fields. So what do you have here? You have an evolution equation for the velocity field, okay? This includes the effects of rotation. Now, the velocity, you only consider the 2D components, okay? You only consider the two velocity components in the plane, okay? And you only consider the two magnetic field components in the plane. And the velocity evolves, the 2D velocity evolves according to this equation. So you have inertia, rotation, I'll come back to this term in a minute, magnetic field and some sort of dissipation. Usually in the atmospheric literature, they tend to choose hyperviscosities here, but you don't have to. This term here is a driving term, essentially, due to small changes in the height of your system. So you have a free surface, which is allowed to move up and down, so you're nearly 2D. This surface it moves a small amount about some equilibrium value, and it's this thing, essentially, which is going to allow you to have a dynamo. The induction equation takes a slightly different form when you're in the plane. You have an equation, this is standard shallow water theory, for the evolution of the height perturbation, and then you have this constraint which arises. This constraint you don't actually have to apply, but this constraint arises if you think that the upper surface of your shallow water system has to remain a field line, which is true in ideal dynamics, but that's not true if you have dissipation. So you can either keep this constraint or not, it doesn't really matter. And this system has been used to extensively examine the large-scale instabilities of strong magnetic fields and differential rotation. And there's a review by Peter Gilman and Paul Kelly. And in fact, these large-scale joint instabilities can be sustained, as Mark Mee showed, not in the shallow water, fully 3D system. I'm really going to look at the evolution of this system in the turbulent regime. So what is known about shallow water dynamos? Well, the answer is not a lot. This paper actually asked the question whether these things can work. I have to say I don't really understand this paper, so I'll move on. So I'm going to ask the question, how does the field amplification occur? How does saturation occur? And what are the effects of driving? So you can imagine these stable layers, they're usually next to convecting regions, so they can often be forced from above or below by convection, by maybe some vortical flow, maybe you have a large-scale weather pattern, for want of a better word, which exerts a stress, or maybe there's a shear flow stress. And these will lead to nearly two-dimensional shallow water turbulence, okay? So the best way of seeing what happens in nearly 2D shallow water turbulence is to decompose the velocity, and again, this is standard in the atmospheric literature. You set your velocity to be the curl of the stream function, plus a bit which is going to correspond to a divergence. Okay, so if it was strictly 2D, you would just have this bit, but this is the bit which allows for deformations in the height and for vertical velocities. So if you take the velocity and you take its curl, then you get the vorticity, which is equal to del squared of the stream function, and if you take the divergence of the velocity, you get delta, which is del squared chi. And again, in the atmospheric literature, they talk about evolving omega and delta. So if you look at the evolution equations for omega and delta, they're quite complicated. I mean, these were written down by Lorenz, and a recent reference is in JFM by these guys. And you can see that the evolution, this is no magnetic field for the moment, the evolution equation for the vorticity, you see there's some driving from the divergence, and you can have dissipation, I've just put a generalized dissipation in here, and forcing in the vorticity equation. So this is, imagine you have some plumes that come down into your stable region with some vorticity, or again some large scale weather patterns with some vorticity. This might force your vorticity equation. One thing to note, that if you force the vorticity equation, and presumably you get a psi and an omega, then this psi and omega can then force the divergence to be non-zero, and so you naturally get deviations from your flat 2D system. You could force the divergence mode directly. You can think of, again, a plume coming down and banging the top of your layer. And again, you could include some forcing from the just in the divergence. Or again, you could think of the height changing, as long as you did it in the self-consistent way, a plume coming down and directly forcing the height. So in principle, you could force any of these equations. In practice, I'm just going to force this equation for the moment. You could put in a small-scale vortical forcing, or a small-scale compressional forcing, or large-scale. So there's a lot of freedom. One thing that they do in the atmospheric literature is to sometimes relax the system to a state that they want to know the dynamics of. So quite a neat trick is to put your forcing to relax the system to a shear, which is similar to what Nick was doing this morning. If you relax it to an unstable shear, then you'll get shear flow turbulence, and you could have a look at the dynamo properties of that. Now, again, this system is not familiar, or at least it wasn't familiar to me, so the important non-dimensional parameters, in the atmospheric literature, again, they usually look rundown experiments from a given flow field U0, but we're just going to force and let the flow field evolve, so this is not really at our disposal except at the end of the calculation. And so the important non-dimensional parameters are what I call it's a kind of Froude number based on the forcing. So if you think of the square root of F naught L as a typical velocity, then this is an important number. So this measures the, it's essentially the stratification to the size of the flow. Okay, it's a Froude number. There's a Rossby number, which again I've done in terms of the forcing, so this is familiar to everybody. Then there's your Reynolds number and your magnetic Reynolds number. You can just write in terms of a magnetic Prandtl number times your Reynolds number. And the important non-dimensional parameter is just a combination of these two, the so-called Berger number, which you can see is independent of velocity. So it measures essentially the effects of stratification to rotation. Okay, so what happens in the turbulent system? And as I said right at the start, I don't really understand this. So if I force a system with small-scale vortices, the system inverse cascades, and this providing that we're stably stratified enough. And this is well understood. In 2D turbulence, you tend to get a kind of inverse cascade. And depending on your Berger number, you can get or not get an inverse cascade. This turbulent flow, which I've shown here, which has shears in it and turbulence as well, is a dynamo. The field grows and saturates, and once the field grows, then the flow thinks, oops, there's a magnetic field there, I better forward cascade, and that's what happens. So let me just show you. This is, I start forcing here, and it settles down to a nice steady state, statistically steady state. Then I add a magnetic field. Magnetic field grows exponentially, and then we go to a different state, which I'll show you in a moment. The flow saturates at a different level. The field saturates. Actually, I've run this on quite a long time, so I'm quite confident that this field is saturated. But the flow goes to something that's small scale. So I forced it with something that's small scale. It inverse cascaded to something that was large scale. I then put in the field, and it went back to being small scale again. Sorry, yeah, doubly periodic. This has rotation, so F is non-zero. Yeah. Okay, so this is the magnetic field that's generated by the vortices. I'm forcing at a large wave number, k is equal to 20, and it wraps up the magnetic field as you might expect. It's a small-scale dynamo, but you do get dynamo action in this system. Good question. The Prandtl number is large here. Large. Yeah. This is F plane. This is F plane. Yeah. There's a, yeah, 5 minutes before the end. 5 minutes before you stand up. Okay. That's 10 minutes before the end. Okay. So there are some technical difficulties with doing a beta plane in shallow water to do with discontinuities of the basic state, which I'm going to do. So this, I thought, I don't really understand this. I'm going to make a better dynamo than this. So a simpler dynamo. They're fairly hard to excite, as you might expect, because they're nearly two-dimensional, and they're very hard to analyze. So I needed a simpler, better dynamo to try and understand something. So I tried to get the best dynamo possible. So if you, as dynamo theorist, somebody came to you and said, what is the best dynamo you can ever have? What would you say? But you're very modest. Sold to the monitor. The best dynamo you can possibly have is the Galloway proxy flow. You can't get a better dynamo than this. The Galloway proxy flow is the superhero of dynamos. And what? This is Proctor. Okay. So what the Galloway proctor does is it writes a velocity field in terms of a stream function. So this is your vertical flow in your plane plus a bit that's out of the plane. But this is the bit I'm not allowed. Right? I'm not allowed to do because, of course, we're shallow water. So you think to yourself, this is a great dynamo, but the vertical velocity is prescribed in W, not small. In the shallow water, the vertical velocity is small. And this thing looks a bit like this. Just for those of you, if there are any of you who don't know what this flow looks like by now, this psi takes the form of eddies moving around with a frequency omega. Okay. So this is what it looks like in the plane, and W, the vertical velocity, is set to be equal to psi. So I couldn't do this, even though this is the best dynamo possible, but what I could do is force in the plane with that forcing, okay? So I'd like similar dynamics, at least in the plane, but I can't prescribe W. So I'm going to select a forcing to drive a vorticity such that if we were in 2D, we would get that system in the plane, right? Psi in the plane is just going to go around like this. But fortunately, I should say, remember, if I force the vorticity, I automatically get whatever delta I like, divergence I like in the shallow water system. It depends on all my parameters. And my height will also evolve. Okay? So this is the not quite so good Galloway proctor flow. So Dave sent Galitis to the Tachocline earlier, so I think I should return the favor. So this one is going to be called the Shallowway proctor flow. It's the... Sorry. I apologize. So you force in the plane? No, I know. I just thought this is going to be a great joke, so I better do the calculation. Okay. So this is the flow. So I force with this forcing, and I let the system evolve. Okay. And the evolution of both the components depend on F and G and U, or if you like, in non-dimensional parameters, what I get hydrodynamically depends on the Froude number, the Rossby number, and the Reynolds number. So this is, again, purely hydrodynamic. So I start forcing, and I let the system evolve until I get to a statistically steady state. And remember, I'm just forcing the vorticity, but of course the height and the vorticity evolve, and so does the divergence. So you get a nice, regular, repeating pattern. And this height is now the displacement from two dimensions, which is going to give you your vertical velocity to enable this thing to be a dynamo. Okay. So what sort of dynamo is this? Well, it's a very annoying dynamo. Okay. So you start integrating, and you think to yourself, this is going to be a great dynamo. Of course, it's not. So this is increasing RM, decreasing eta, if you like. So you start off and you think, well, 0.01, well, that's never going to be a dynamo. 0.005, still not a dynamo. 0.001, well, we're kind of getting there, but not quite. Now, this is what happens if you actually keep checking on your calculation, which is a bad thing to do because you get more and more depressed. But if you just think sod it and go home, which is what I did, you come back the next morning, and let's have a look at this 0.011. What happens, okay, so I've integrated here up to 40 times. then this thing is a dynamo, okay? It went down to here, and then it starts to amplify field and saturates, okay? Now, it takes, essentially, some diffusion times to expel the field into the places where the vertical velocity is not small to get your dynamo started. So as you increase the magnetic Reynolds number, you have to wait longer and longer and longer to find your eigenfunction, which is really annoying. It doesn't like to be watched. So how do these things saturate? Okay. So these two are also dynamos as well. This is, again, just changing the magnetic Reynolds number. So let me just show you the evolution. So this is the magnetic energy for eta equals the smallest magnetic Reynolds number. And you see I go into a state where this is the kinetic energy, the magnetic energy, and the changes in the height. And here, this flow is saturated by essentially leaving the vertical velocity the same, but suppressing the motions in the plane. Okay, that is not the only thing that can happen. If you increase the magnetic Reynolds number, you tend to get this kind of bursting behavior. So here, the magnetic field grows, the kinetic energy in the plane decays, and you get this kind of bursting behavior. I've moved this, for those of you who are very eagle-eyed, I've moved this potential energy graph, if you like, up so we can just see what's going on. And you get this kind of relaxation oscillation between it altering the flow in the plane and then altering the vertical velocity. If you increase the magnetic Reynolds number again, then you get a more chaotic state, and this thing saturates via a very complicated nonlinear interaction. Sometimes it's modifying the flow in the plane, and at other times we still get this bursting behavior of modifying the vertical velocity. Okay, this, for those of you of a nervous disposition, look away now. That was a very long run. This is the movie of what happens, and I apologize. This is all kinematic, and eventually, whoa, there, it's going to saturate. Okay. And it's very hard to see what's going on, so I better get some better movies of that anyway. Okay, so let me repeat that. Saturation occurs via three mechanisms: the back reaction on the divergence, the back reaction on the vorticity, and making the flow more two-dimensional. And in fact, which mechanism is more important depends on the Berger number, the Reynolds number, and the magnetic Reynolds number. And I think if I then did the shallow way Proctor forcing on with smaller scale, I could get this phenomenon where it inverse cascades and then forward cascades back again. But I haven't checked that. So just some conclusions. I think it's fair to say that stably stratified domains can have some interesting dynamics, and that these can be mediated by the presence of a magnetic field. A turbulent dynamo can operate in shallow water, but the saturation mechanism can be difficult to interpret. This simple model with this vortical forcing does lead to vertical flows, which do lead to dynamo action, and they can saturate in a number of ways. One thing that's interesting is when the flow forward cascades, the field has a tendency to inverse cascade, which is interesting. And so if you have an inverse cascading field, and maybe you have a shear flow, then maybe this is a mechanism for getting a large-scale field. But I think that's probably a bit of speculation to finish with. So thank you very much.
Bizarre. Any questions?
Sorry, Dave.
Yes, I have a comment and a question about your first turbulent dynamo. First, it's easy to understand why the cascades change sign. It's because without magnetic field, entropy is concerned. Mm. And of course, in the presence of magnetic field, there is Lorentz force. It's no longer concerned. And instead, you can have a cascade of magnetic helicity or cross helicity.
That's what Pat was talking
about. Okay. But then, in the slide you showed about your turbulent dynamo, are you sure it's a dynamo? Because it seemed to me that it's slowly decaying. And if you continue further, does it go to zero or does it saturate?
No, it saturates, yeah. I mean, I'm always very, very worried about things like this, and integrate it for ages. It stays there.
So I had a follow-up comment on a question. I mean, from the point of view of homogenization or expulsion, I mean, you know this, but is that while the vorticity can or cannot be expelled, depending on the relevant ratios, the flux is always expelled. So in right. some sense, I think that's a mechanistic way of looking at why you get an inverse cascade of magnetic potential always, while the flow dynamics can be doing other things. But the question for you, Steve,
just before you have to be a bit careful, because what you just said was strictly 2D.
Yes.
And so when you allow variations in height,
fair enough. Yeah, but I mean within the 2D picture. Yeah. Now the question is, I'm curious, when you're getting these cyclic states, what is going on, if anything, on trade-offs between the zonal flows and the magnetic field?
You knew
that was coming.
Yeah. I think the short answer is, for this one, there are no zonal flows. I mean, it's an F-plane. There are large-scale flows.
Yeah, same difference.
And so, yeah, the large-scale flows are affected. And so they get quenched, and then and then the bursts can happen.
Right.
And then you come out, and then they get regenerated, and then the whole. But it's quite difficult to analyze, even in that simple.
I can believe it.
Regarding the large-scale flows that you suppress in the presence of magnetic fields, these large-scale magnetic flows in the absence of magnetic fields, do they survive at large fluid Reynolds numbers equally well, or
yeah.
is there no effect? From
They survive at large fluid Reynolds numbers. In fact, when people do forced hydro, shallow water, they tend to arbitrarily damp those flows to stop them taking over the whole system.
So. May I ask how does Dr. Shalloway feel about being put to the base of a stable region at the bottom of the convection zone? What comments does he have?
He's got a companion now, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yes. If I have a similar question to this, apart from this beautiful result, I want to make one step back and ask how applicable to the Taco-Klein. Because Taco-Klein is a boundary layer, right? Just imagine a turbulent boundary layer, Prandtl boundary layer in a fluid. And you now suggest to analyze it, forgetting about the fluid as a whole. The results can be totally misleading. Right? For example, when you are constructing boundary layer solution, it demands that it decays at infinity.
If these things mean anything,
matching asymptotics, and it's a similar numerical solution and asymptotic solution are similar, right?
I would say these results, if they're relevant at all, are relevant to the deeper Taco-Klein, the ones which is really where things are being buffeted from above, but not the upper Taco-Klein where you have the strong field. You have the overshooting convection. These results.
You cannot subdivide it into further sublayers. It's already too very.
Well, yeah. We can do anything. We have the Galloway problem.
To what extent is helicity necessary for this? If you shut off the helicity, does it go in?
So in the second one, the helicity does what it wants to do, because all I'm doing is forcing in the plane, and then
but you have
else.
An F, you have an
so,
omega.
So you have an F, so F lets it evolve. So it's a good question. I haven't quantified, you know, growth rates against helicity. I think they will play a part, because if you make F too large, then you shut this thing down. There's an optimal F. So if F is good, you get some good helicity, and that's a good good dynamo. But I haven't quantified that yet.
Okay, well, let's thank Steve again. And the plan now is that we're going to have